Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast. We are live, well, this is recorded, but we are at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association convention here in Houston, Texas. It's been a great week working the booth and talking with producers. And with us today, we have Brad Brundage from Transova and then Brian Holstead from Prime Source Genetics. And we're going to talk about a cool project that they are working on. So why don't you guys just introduce yourselves first, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll dive right into it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, Emily and Sarah and NCBA. You're right. It's been a lot of fun this week to work through. A little bit about me. So Brad Brundage, I'm from northern Missouri originally and grew up on a cow-calf operation there. And through college and livestock judging, found a real interest in reproductive science, and long story short, that's led me to Transova. I started with Transova 7 years ago in a client service role, have put a few years in as our regional business manager in our southern region, currently our client development manager, and work with some of our commercial accounts. Yeah, so Prime Source Genetics and Terminal Embryos. I'll let Brian go ahead and kind of introduce himself.
I'm Brian Holstead. I'm originally from Southwest Oklahoma. Grew up on kind of a mixed farm, cow-calf, stockers, a little bit of row crop type situation. Went to Oklahoma State University, animal science there. After college, kind of migrated to the cattle feeding industry, feed yard. Still with a hand in cow-calf, so genetics has played a big role in some stuff we've done in the feed yard space. Really started working on the idea of Prime Source close to 3 years ago. Brad was one of the initial people that I had reached out to whenever this was still kind of a conceptual thing, and clicked with Brad right away. Just kind of from our initial conversation could tell like there was a mutual interest, and just from the questions, you know, back and forth, that it was an idea that both of us kind of had on the forefront of our mind. And so it seems like to me it's taken a long time, over 3 years. It really, you know, 3 years to build this company and to get it started the way we have. I feel really fortunate to have found Brad, that it was somebody that took what we wanted to do, the concept, and we ran with it. So with his help, with Transova's help, we've kind of built this from a concept into an actual model. We've actually, you know, had used Transova's resources to actually put it into practice, where we've done trials and actually got it to a production level. So long story short, that's kind of how the origination of Prime Source has came about.
Thank you both for joining us. And Brad, this isn't the first time we've put you in the hot seat this week. We've had you do several interviews, and this podcast will come out after the fact, but hopefully you've seen some of what Brad's already said about some of our different programs here at NCBA. But going back to the Prime Source, Brad, maybe can you tell us a little bit about kind of the partnership that's evolved? You know, Brian's talked about that already, but kind of maybe a little bit about the program just from a basic overview, and then kind of how each of our teams kind of work together to create the end product.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a great question. So yeah, as Brian has mentioned, this has kind of evolved over the last couple years, and I think he hit on a really important topic, is just finding a lot of mutual goals, not only between dairy and beef producers and beef feeders, but also Transova and guys like Brian and Prime Source. And so some of these mutual goals have been, you know, to create a more valuable beef product derived from dairy herds. And, you know, obviously we've seen a great innovation as far as beef on dairy. And I really feel as though this is just kind of the next step in starting to kind of build this out and get it to the point where it is today. And so yeah, Prime Source has obviously is carrying a lot of the load in terms of logistics on this project. You know, there's a lot that's at play in terms of calves being born and calf ranches and then feedlots and just making sure that the embryo calves that are being produced are getting to where they need to go and keeping track of them, and then also collecting that data on those calves as they go and flow through the system and just really helping connect people within the structure on where calves are at and providing that sort of feedback data to continue to improve the calf's value over time.
I agree with Brad there. It's a space that in the last 3 to 4 years, you know, dairy beef has been around for probably close to 10 years when they started doing it. But really over the last 2 to 3 years, you've just seen it explode where it has become an accepted practice in the dairy industry. A lot of progressive dairies where it has become a commonplace practice. And we see this as just the next logical step of that is whereas the dairy beef cross calf has generated more value from those calves being born every year in that dairy, the prime source embryo calves, we're just taking it one step further. So we're completely eliminating the dairy part of that equation in the genetics on this animal. So we're producing really as high quality of a commercial feeder animal as we can genetically make in today's genetics. So it's just another way to carve out another value add to that supply stream, because we're not adding any cattle to the system. These cows are going to have calves every year no matter what. So we're just replacing a less desirable, less efficient animal with a premium animal that is more efficient in the feed yard. So that animal is going to use less resources. It's going to be less days on feed. And so it's really a sustainable program that we're bringing out to the dairies.
Sums it up really well and hits several big points there. I think one that I would tack onto that oftentimes we overlook and kind of take for granted, but it's maybe adds just as much value as the rest of them, is traditional feeder calf production and cow calf is quite seasonal as it relates to, you know, when the volume of calves are being born and produced. And it's no secret that, you know, dairies are having calves daily and, you know, volumes of calves that are coming out weekly and monthly. And so I think there's a lot of potential in terms of a terminal beef embryo with some carcass merit, like what we've worked to create, in just consistency, not just consistency of the product and the carcass itself, but consistency of supply and the doors that opens in terms of marketability, branded beef programs, and just the reliability of the supply in and of itself, not struggling as much with seasonality as what traditional beef production does.
You're talking about, you know, I think sustainability is kind of a buzzword right now. How are you guys selecting the genetics of these embryo calves, you know, from a sire standpoint, or even on the dam side? Is there anything specific that you're looking for?
It's very much a custom product. So depending on what the customer's goals are. So we are providing a source on the dam side. So we are providing an Angus-based high carcass merit animal as the base on the dam side. Now, depending on what kind of program that's going to go into, if it's just a commercial feed yard or if it's a branded program or if it's any type of special genetics, Wagyu, things like that, it is very much a custom embryo, so we leave the sire decisions up to the end user, the customer, unless they don't have, you know, something in mind, and then they ask us for our opinion. We'll give them our experiences through the system building these cattle. But we want to be really adamant about that, is this is a custom product. So it doesn't matter what part of the country you're in. It doesn't matter what your system or your niche is. We can fulfill that with your sire selection on our Angus-based high-performance carcass animal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sums it up really great. On the sire side of terminal beef production, fat cattle production, I think there's a variety of philosophies on what sire's genetics make the best type of fat cattle. And in my own opinion, there's probably several of them that are right. You know, I don't know that there's one clear-cut choice that of sires that make the best, because there's a variety of markets out there, right? And so I think what's really unique about Prime Source is not just the ability to capitalize on volume of embryos and feeder calf and fat cattle production, but more specifically, the carcass merit that the dam and the donor side of the equation of this embryo brings to the table. You know, like I said, variety of sires out there that can make good fat cattle. And we wanted to leave that end of it really open to the client and the user, because there's different markets out there. But being able to put those on really high quality dams and carcass merit type females, I think is really unique in this space.
Brian, you mentioned that this isn't a one size fits all program. You know, it's very customizable, kind of like how we always talk about the, you know, the buzzword of our own, the toolbox, and how we customize it to each client's goals. Yep, drink. Going on with that, tell me about maybe conversations you've had here at NCBA. You know, they're obviously going to be specialized conversations with each individual. How have those conversations gone while you've been here this week?
It's been real eye-opening. You know, we're all kind of in our own little regions, and we see what we see on a daily basis. Even being in the feed yard space, I see multiple philosophies, multiple programs. But when you come to a place like NCBA, it brings it to a whole new level. You know, it takes the regionality of it. You see all over the United States. And just because we do a certain thing in Oklahoma or Texas may be a little different than what they're doing on the West Coast or even in the Northeast. So it's eye-opening to see not only the different niche markets or the different processes that these guys have, but the number of them. It's amazing. You know, we see this beef industry as one big animal, but there are so many different regionalities and ways of doing things and ways of getting to maybe even the same goal, but a different way of getting there. So it's always an education every time I come to one of these. I always learn so much. I always see new ways of doing things, you know, and the technology this year is a little bit different than that last year. Just like, you know, we're kind of unveiling the prime source embryo here at NCBA. And so there's a lot of people that are going to be amazed by what we're doing with this in the dairy space. And so it's always fun to come and be around like-minded people and just see the eye-opening things that are going on around the industry.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's easy to get excited, or at least for us, talking about this particular prime source embryo and the implications that could have in terms of, you know, to what you brought up earlier, Emily, sustainability for both the beef, you know, the fat cattle sector, feeder calf, but also the dairy, you know. And we had talked earlier, and some of the conversations I really love to have and things that we get into is, you know, that famous saying, you know, the dangerous words are, this is the way we've always done it, right? And I like bringing this topic up in scenarios because, you know, with what's working today may not be working as well in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, right? And so I think looking at something like this to innovate and keep pushing forward to make us more efficient in the feedlot and more create more revenue from a dairy standpoint is really unique. But I would also, to your question, Sarah, say that probably one of the coolest things within this product from a sustainability standpoint is to look into the sheer impact of that number of cattle in feed yards. And so, for example, you know, a pen of dairy beef cross calves versus a pen of all beef calves, just to look at the number of days on feed and then equate that to the pounds of commodities that were grown to feed those extra days and the gallons of diesel that were burned to grow those commodities, it's really cool. I guess it really excites guys like us and cool to bring those up in conversations to think about the impact that this could have in a lot more areas than just pounds of beef.
Yeah. What is that stat that everybody throws around of, you know, by 2050, if we don't evolve our technology, we're not going to be able to feed the world. And I mean, this is just a step in that right direction of making sure that we have enough meat or protein to feed the population that's rapidly growing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, like in some of these conversations, it's becoming, I guess, kind of more comfortable of a set of facts that, you know, they're not making any more land and we're being asked to produce more product, whether it's meat or dairy, with, you know, less commodities, less carbon footprint, less water, less land. And so I think this fits right into the future of being able to try to achieve that.
I agree, and not, you know, we hear the buzzword of sustainability. We always think first, or I do, I think environmental sustainability, but there's also financial sustainability as well. And with the markets right now, you know, we've got corn $6, you know, over $6 corn, and I don't know that that's going to be the new norm, but I don't really see it going back to $3 anytime soon. And so feeding a dairy or even a dairy beef cross calf with $6 corn, it's just, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to make it pencil out. So if we can replace that animal who is efficient and who does eat more, you know, substantially more of that $6 corn in its lifetime with an animal that yields more red meat, it's a higher quality product, and it does it in less days with less emissions. Yeah, we've got the environmental sustainability side of it too, but financial sustainability, I mean, it just makes sense if we can eliminate an inefficient animal with an efficient one.
It sounds like an embryo product that's impacting not just one area. It's got a multifaceted impact on operations, and that's what I think is neat about this project and about this collaboration for these beef embryos. How are you directing people when they want to know more about your program? Is there one, you know, are they supposed to contact you, Brian, or you, Brad, or how have we been funneling kind of our conversations, you know, about this program in general?
Brian and I have really fielded most of our kind of conversations and business meetings. So if someone would like to know more about it, obviously they can reach out to Brian at Prime Source Genetics or myself at Transova Genetics. And ideally, you know, we can run through a lot of the nuts and bolts, I guess, of the embryo and how we best, you know, would advise on implementing it and some of the options with it. But ultimately, would love opportunities to really sit down face to face if possible and see if it's something that might work for your operation, whether you're a dairy or a feedlot or a calf ranch or maybe just a beef purveyor or I mean, it's really applicable in a lot of ways. I mean, I think we've also had conversations with, you know, retailers and restaurant type people trying to create a more consistent product, you know, and a way to really kind of vertically integrate their supply chain of beef.
Yeah, and I echo what Brad said. It's not a one-size-fits-all program. So we've got customers that are dairies. We've got customers that are cattle feeders. We've got customers that are maybe a calf ranch. We got a customer that may be a packer or maybe even a branded beef program that custom kills somewhere. So there's a lot of different scenarios into when and how and where these embryos can go. I mean, we initially think of it right off the bat as being going into a dairy cow. And that may not necessarily always be the case. I mean, we may have a dairy in Idaho putting them in, but we may have a ranch in Florida that because of their environment, they have to run an eared cow that necessarily maybe their calves won't fit a branded beef program in Nebraska. Well, with this embryo, that dairy in Idaho can be raising the exact same animal as an eared cow ranch in Florida. And so it's really universal, and I think that will evolve as we go through. Yes, currently it is targeted more toward the dairy market, but I think there will be applications in the future as we grow to where it may be going into some beef herds that maybe the environment requires a certain cow to be ran, but that necessarily is not the most advantageous animal to be an offspring.
Yeah, and I guess that leads to a question that I was thinking of is, you know, we're talking about putting a beef embryo into a dairy cow, or, you know, you're saying somebody in the South that, you know, needs an ear cow, but whatever the reasons, you know, some of these producers have never utilized an embryo program. You know, and so it's like, it sounds like a good idea, but taking that leap of an embryo program might, you know, cause people to drag their feet. How do you talk through that with them, you know, and their concern?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's obviously one of the kind of big rocks, I guess, in trying to advance this embryo product in this way of producing cattle. So Transova obviously is a great resource in terms of our years of service work from a consulting standpoint, and it really is the first and foremost of starting any project is doing that legwork to learn as much as we can from the producer who's going to be raising these calves and learn as much as we can about how to tailor fit an embryo transfer program for it to be successful. I mean, you know, we talk about all these cool things that this calf is going to be able to do in terms of sustainability and red meat yield and efficiency in the feed yard, but that doesn't happen if we can't get the live calf on the ground. And you can't get the live calf on the ground if you can't make a good embryo and achieve a pregnancy rate to begin with. And so obviously, you know, a dairy is focused on, you know, producing, you know, milk and components and managing their days open. And so we've got to be just very wise about how we go about the initial legwork to even have an opportunity at all this other cool stuff. And you're exactly right, Emily. I mean, for someone who's never done an embryo transfer program, it can appear quite daunting and sometimes a little intimidating. But I can definitely vouch for it's far from impossible. You know, with the right team of people and the right amount of time and work put into designing the program, they can be extremely successful and not nearly as painful as what they may look like from the outside. But it does take work and it does take a lot of effort in terms of planning and consulting on the front end. I wish I could say that, you know, it's you could just ship them out and get a calf back and it's real easy, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of planning to be successful in embryo. And that's, I think, a great partnership with Prime Source, because we're on the same page there. You know, we understand that is a vital piece to any of this being possible, is achieving acceptable pregnancy rates and live calf numbers to begin with.
I agree, and I see this as a, you know, progressive producer, whether you are in the beef space or the dairy space. It is geared toward a progressive producer that do have intensive management programs, because it does require that. But, you know, at one point in time, artificial insemination was daunting to a lot of people. And it's commonplace now. You have people that do their own. And I see that in the future that this isn't a process to where you'll have to have some specialized technician come put an embryo in. It will take time to get there. But over time, there will be in-house people that are capable and are successful at putting embryos in. It may not seem like that way today, but at one point in time, you know, AI was thought of as the same way. So it'll take some time to get there, but I think there will be a lot more technicians, you know, in-house technicians that will be very good at putting in embryos.
Yeah, just to add on to that a little bit, I think we're in a really cool spot right now in terms of kind of the jumping off point with this type of concept, you know, and Brian and I talk a lot of times, it's with each passing day, this sort of concept gets cheaper and cheaper. You know, it's never as expensive as it is right now, but I'm excited that we're at least a jumping off point, because ultimately it's kind of the question we all have to ask ourselves at the end of the day is the juice really worth the squeeze? You know, I mean, an embryo transfer program, it can be challenging versus, you know, just AI, right? And so just being able to talk through those scenarios to determine if it really is worth it and it's going to add revenue, add profitability, and even if it's not adding a lot, is it, you know, taking away from the efficiencies of the dairy, or is it adding a lot of workload, and what areas can we improve that? What kind of systems can we put in place to change that or improve that? Because going back to some of our original comments, you know, what's quote unquote sustainable today may not be in a few years. And like we talked about land and water and commodity usages, I think the earlier we can focus on that, the better.
I think, Brad, we've had in our discussion before, I think he's even quoted the numbers to me, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I know over the last 20 years, the proficiencies and the success rates of embryo transfer have gone up, whereas the cost of doing it has gone down. And it's really hard to think of another product or service that over the past 20 years has become, you know, much more successful, and while at the same time becoming cheaper. And we don't see that changing. I mean, we see what it costs today and the proficiency levels of today. We see that trend continuing in the future.
You've talked about how each of your conversations are tailored a little differently, depending kind of on who you're talking to and your audience and what their goals are. Brad, we've talked about the implanting and transferring of these embryos. What are some of the options you've gone through for completing those transfers for some of these people that you've talked to? Have you gone through different options, or, you know, what has been out there that you've helped solve some of that
problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's certainly one of the bigger challenges to mass application of an embryo product in any space, dairy or beef, is technicians, skilled technicians to implant the embryos and achieve pregnancy rate. And so some of the ways that we've tackled that thus far, here again, obviously relying heavily on Transova's ability to kind of deploy technicians in various areas of the United States and, you know, and being able to call upon team members to train also in-house breeders at dairies has been a vital part to the progression of this type of project. And you know, it's an ever-evolving project, you know, in terms of growth and scale. And so what we're able to cover today, we're constantly trying to figure out ways on how to cover more tomorrow. And that, like I said, goes with training new technicians at dairies, training our own in-house, you know, technicians and our veterinarians that are able to travel to new locations and create new relationships with managers at dairies and just develop those programs. And so it's tough to say that there's really not just a sure enough protocol on how to tackle every situation, because they're all just a little bit different, you know, in terms of in-house breeders that are maybe willing to be trained or coverage that we have in certain areas. But thankfully, Transova's been built on that service type reputation, and that's ultimately what comes first for us, really, is being able to service these accounts, and so that's helped a great deal.
Brad, he's the Transova expert, and I feel that I'm in a really fortunate spot to have teamed up with Transova because of their expertise, and there's nobody better to be able to tackle something like this. Yes, it is daunting to think on a commercial scale, on a feed yard scale, the number of embryos that will be put in over the next 5 years, but I'm supremely confident and feel very fortunate that Transova is the one that is going to be help tackling that project.
Mic drop. Perfect.
Well, we're getting to the end of our time here. I guess, is there anything that we didn't ask or something that we need to include in our episode? Or Sarah, did you have any other questions?
I just, you know, we've talked about consistency of supply, sustainability. I see another great aspect of this we didn't touch on a whole lot is consistency of product. You know, we talked about this earlier today that that's one knock on the beef industry that over the past years is you eat a pork chop in Houston and then you go to North Carolina to eat a pork chop. You can't tell the difference. It's the same product. But if you eat a steak here or you go to North Carolina or you go to somewhere else, that ribeye may not be the same as the one you ate here. And so I see this as a major step in helping solve that problem so we can get some of the consistency that we may have been losing out to the pork and the poultry industry. And that we are producing in mass, you know, full lots of half brothers, half sisters that are going to grade the same. The carcass weight is going to be the same. Ribeye shape is going to be the same. And so that we start to take some of that variability out of the end product. And I know that's been just the way that the beef industry is structured with so many producers that it's a different animal and it is harder to conquer that. But I see this as being a major, major step in that direction. And that's what lends itself so well, this production style, to go into branded beef programs, because they know that ribeye is going to be the same every single time.
Yeah, I think I couldn't say it any better. I think that's an awesome piece to this puzzle. My kind of ending comment on it is going back to just what our mutual goals are here, not just Prime Source and Transova, but also as we talk with producers and cattle feeders and packers and beef retailers on, you know, we're a consumer-driven market, and we try our best to pay attention to those indicators that our consumer is telling us that they want, and obviously consistency is a big piece of that, but also, as it's came up several times now, sustainability and that sort of thing. And so I think it's just really exciting, the conversations that have had and taking place in the future ones that are coming down the pipe about this particular product in terms of what all is on the table here. And that's something probably where Brian and I have had our most successful kind of momentum on this project is just putting anything and everything in terms of ideas on the table to achieve those common goals. There's really not an angle on this outside of producing more beef with less commodities and less land and less water. How do we accomplish that and still create revenue for producers and make it financially sustainable? And so that's just, I guess, the last thing I'll leave it with is if you have a thought or an idea of how this might be applicable to you, please reach out, because anything and everything has been on the table so far to try to accomplish these common goals.
I guess if Emily and I are in marketing, and so when I'm thinking about how you label this product, it's like a consistently consistent product available consistently.
Sustainably consistent.
Yeah. There you go.
Awesome. Thank you guys for joining us. It's been great hanging out with you and meeting you again, we already met, but again, in Texas. So yeah, if anybody has questions, feel free to reach out to us. We'll get you in contact with Brad and Brian. So thanks again, everybody, for listening to the Powered by Transova podcast. We'll catch you next time.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.